Welcome. I'd like to acknowledge the continuing sovereignty of all First Nations peoples right across the country. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, let's hope you've all had a great weekend. The footy's back on. The NRL season has begun. And Wayne Bennett suffered his second defeat of the year, first with the NRL All-Stars, or the All-Nations All-Stars being defeated by the First Nations All-Stars. And now the Rabbitohs have come through and cleaned up the Broncos. But anyway, that's footy. Gives you something to do on, gives me something to do on a weekend. Turn the TV on and stay stuck there, planted there for the weekend. Almost like that it is. Anyway. I see there's a domestic violence report handed down by former Governor General Quentin Bryce. And it's called Not Now, Not Ever, Putting an End to Domestic and Family Violence in Queensland. This has been given to Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk. Well, it was handed over to the Queensland government a few weeks ago. And just some of the figures, you know, this is horrifying sort of stuff. The report has noted that in 2013-2014, there were 66,016 occurrences of domestic and family violence reported to Queensland Police. 66,000. That equates to 180 incidents every day across the state. 180 in this state daily. This is outrageous. It's unbelievable. The annual cost has been estimated at $2.7 billion to $3.2 billion a year. That's the annual cost to the economy, the Queensland economy. Wow. This is, I haven't read it yet, but just reading the headlines and things, there's certainly a concerted effort needs to be made when there's that sort of, with the rate of domestic violence happening at such a, like 180 incidents a day reported. Every day in this state there's 180 incidents of domestic and family violence reported to police in Queensland alone. You know, I see, talk about violence, I see the police, they're still sitting there at Gladstone Road. I think it was a homeless man was stabbed to death last Thursday or Friday. And the forensics and everybody is still there. They must be camping there. That's on Gladstone Road over over around Annerley Hill there, somewhere or other. But look, domestic violence. Have you got a comment on domestic violence? Now, when it's costing that sort of $2.7 billion to $3.2 billion a year, when it's costing that sort of money, this is nothing to be sneezed at. Something's got to be done. We've all seen it. We've all seen it. And we've all, I would believe, without exception, we've all turned a blind eye at one time or another. It's a difficult one to deal with. When you're, when it's just, as simple as just hearing the neighbours having a blue and there's a bit of crashing and smashing and things, you know, you don't even see it, you're just hearing it and you know that, oh, our old mate's probably a bit inebriated and sounds like he's going off and the missus is yelling and screaming and, you know, when it's not in our faces, but we can hear it. And I do believe, without exception, we have all turned a blind eye at one time or another. So if you've got any thoughts on it, domestic violence is a hell of a cost to the economy. It's a hell of a high number of incidents. You know, 180 incidents daily being reported to police. $2.7 to $3.2 billion, so you might say around somewhere around $3 billion a year is the cost. Now, this is where we need to continue that discussion, or where that discussion, that topic of, by gee, it's even slipped my mind. Taking money off the away from the budget in trying to deal with the situation. Look at the preventative aspect of it. Reinvestment. That's what it's called. Justice reinvestment. Well, to do justice to the women and the children and the men in Queensland, across the country, there needs to be this perspective of dealing with it, which comes under within that framework of justice reinvestment. And it simply means, if it's costing near $3 billion a year in Queensland alone, scrape off a couple of mil. Put a couple of mil into programs or projects that have been identified that can assist. Look at what works in dealing with these situations. I think it's largely, well, I don't know. I'm no expert on this sort of business. I've seen too much of it in my lifetime. Frustration due to a lot of things. I mean, it could be lack of suitable housing, lack of income, lack of money. Alcohol, drug use and abuse. It could be a range of things that lay at the bottom of this sort of business. But we must look at justice reinvestment. There's got to be ways of dealing with this issue of domestic and family violence. There's got to be a way of dealing with it. Or a number of different ways, not a way, a number of different ways. My guest, live in the studio, Mr. Michael Drahm. Welcome to the... And Mr. Michael Drahm is the Men's Health, Social and Emotional Wellbeing Officer with the Punupima Health Service up in Cairns, and works in Cairns and Cape York communities. Michael, welcome to the program. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks, Tiger. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah. I mean, you've been on a few times over the years.
Yeah, the first time, I think, was in Napranum when we worked with Mary G.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're still in health and
yep.
and stuff?
Yep.
You've changed from Queensland Health over to Punupima, community-controlled
yep.
organisation?
Yep, community-controlled.
And how are you finding that, like working for a community-controlled organisation as opposed to a government?
Well, I suppose we can delve more into communities, you know. Like, in particular, I work with men's group, and we do a lot of stuff in men's group. And one of the communities I'm working in at the moment, Kawanyama and Wujil, yeah, they're doing some good stuff there, and they're deadly followers too.
Deadly. Listen, tell us your mob, your country.
On my mother's side, Darumbal, down near Rockhampton, Shoalwater Bay area. But there's sneaky suspicion that we could be Kala Lee from Sherberg mob too.
True.
So, yeah, we're tracing all that back, like, you know, and on my father's side, that's up near the Boulders in Babinda. That's Yidinji or Manyawaje mob. But on my mother's side, you know, I suppose growing up, my parents... brought me up with Malayan custom, and I was angry at first, but then I realised, you know, I was born under the Aboriginal Act of Australia. So, and there's 9 kids in our family, we're all different shades of black. And so in order to keep us together, we had to identify with another culture.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, on that side, that's my father's side too.
Yep.
Because his father was from that way, you know.
All right, all right. Yes, you know, that's a good point you make. Growing up under the Act, and where the children were being taken away.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of our mob in those days were forced to say, oh, no, we're not Aboriginal, we're this or we're that, you know, to avoid that.
Yeah, just to avoid being taken away from your parents.
Being split up and losing your kids, yeah.
Because, you know, like being Murray, like, country's really important to us. Because, you know, we look at land, for instance, you know, we don't look at it as land. We looked at it as our medicine place, you know, like it's a place where we can go and get bush tucker and all that too.
That's
so,
it. Yeah.
So any sort of land belonging to Murray people is, you know.
It's not just real estate to us.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Stuff like that.
I've done all my schooling in Innisfail. I finished my grade 10 in Bibinda. And I came down when I was 15 or 16, going on 16, I came down to Brisbane to do an apprenticeship, which I didn't get to finish, of course. There was circumstances around that. And I
what
suppose,
was that in? What trade?
Diesel engineering.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, so yeah. It was a good trade, but they didn't agree with... Because I went for a trip. When this is when I first met you, Tiger. I went for a trip down to Canberra. And for me, it was just a free bus ride at first. But it was down for 10 Embassy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, raising 10 Embassy was a wake-up call for me.
Mm.
I suppose that's where I got my true identity. Was down there just to see all the pride and passion, you know, of being black. It was perfect for me. So I concentrate a lot now on being black, I suppose.
Identity, yeah. Eh? Identity, yeah. And culture.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, good on you. So, Innisfail, Bibinda, you would have had plenty of, done a fair bit of swimming at the boulders there. And
oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And something's a magical place.
Oh, yeah.
Magical place.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah,
except for that big pool down the bottom there.
Yeah, the Devil's Pool.
The Devil's Pool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, there's legend to that one.
There's story to that.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. A few people been taken there.
Yeah, young men.
Mm. Yes, young men. For that woman called
her husband. I don't know what the count's up to, but I think it's about 21, 22.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yes, but no, what a beautiful place. It must have some good stories to it up there, the boulders. It's probably one of the first times I've seen the water underneath, like, sort of, you can hear it rattling through those big boulders and through those rocks, that water coming through and stuff, you know.
The rapids and that, yeah.
Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful, clean water too, you know.
Oh, amazing, eh?
Mm.
All right. Now, you're talking about men's groups and things. What, I was just reading some of the statistics from Quentin Bryce's report. What she calls Not Now, Not Ever, which she just handed to the Queensland Government. And it's a putting an end to domestic and family violence. Yeah, Not Now, Not Ever, putting an end to domestic and family violence. She's saying, as this report says, 66,000 occurrences a year, equating to 180 incidents of domestic and family violence every day, reported to police, costing an average of around $3 billion just to Queensland alone.
Mm.
Pretty heavy statistics, eh?
Those numbers are high, all right.
It's high. Incidences are high. Now, you've been working in this field for some years, men's health.
Yeah, yeah, I have been. When I was with Queensland Health, it was more around health promotion. But with the Puna Pima, it's... you know, men's health. And we deal with some of those issues, like family violence, for instance, you know, like men aren't always the perpetrators, but it gets to a point when, you know, they want to walk out, but, you know, black woman, you know. But when a man keeps getting nitpicked or whatever, you know, he'll turn around and then become a perpetrator.
Mm, mm.
So what we work on is establishing men groups, making men's group stronger, so that men have somewhere to go. Because I once rang up, you know, about building a place for men's group in Lockhart River when I was there. And I was told that it's all right for men to just sit under a tree. Well, you know, they need a place where they can possibly sleep the night or something like that.
We need a bit more than a bloody tree to sit under, don't we?
Oh, the tree's fine, you know.
Yeah, the tree is fine.
You can work outside with these guys. You don't have to work inside with them.
Exactly.
You know, they probably feel more comfortable under a tree.
Oh, for sure. No,
but if you're looking after them overnight, you know, you don't want to put them under a tree.
Put them in a swag under a tree, eh?
In a swag, yeah.
All right. One of the big problems, Michael, from my observations, is the role of men, First Nations men, has changed with colonisation.
Yeah.
It's changed, the role of men. I don't know, what are your observations? What are your thoughts? There's a different situation now. I mean, it was clearly identified what our roles were, women's roles, men's roles, and the overlapping.
That was before colonisation. But I don't know, my point of view is that when we got colonised, men lost everything.
Mm.
You know, they were taken away as slaves. They lost their kids and their wives, and you know, so they lost everything.
Even like being out of work and being unable to provide for the family.
Yeah, well,
that's got to have a big impact on
massive impact
on a man.
Well, you know, like I remember one time I was out of work there for a little while, you know, and it cut me to pieces to know that I couldn't provide for my family, and my wife had to work at the time, but you know, it just cut me to pieces. And when I got a job, like I went out and I done anything, you know, you name it, I've done it. You know, but you know, that's just to provide.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's what these men are aiming for. You know, in one community, for instance, I worked in, and one of the guys said, you know, non-Indigenous people have a resume, you know, just so big. Indigenous people, we have resumes so thick that, you know, you're flat out carrying the damn things. Mm. But the worst part about it, we can't get a job.
Yes, the being able to find employment is a big part of it. Overcrowded housing is another issue, serious issue, right across the country.
Yep.
I made a comment while before you came in that I would think each and every one of us as men particularly would have turned a blind eye to domestic violence at some point, at particular times. You know, maybe not all the time, but there are times when we've pretended it's not happening, and it could be as simple as listening to the neighbours, knowing that the old fellas tends to drink a bit and stuff, and we can hear them yelling and screaming from time to time. Or we have heard, you know, and we've turned a blind eye. Well, what can we do? I mean, you've worked with men and men's groups and trying to provide opportunities for men. What do you say to people?
Education. We need to get it out there that, you know, support or help could be the bloke sitting next to you. You know, like in communities, our families, like terms like, you know, we don't just say cousin, we say cousin brother. And the reason being for that, or cousin sister, you know, they live right next door to us. So we live in that close vicinity. And the thing is, like, it wasn't that the men were turning a blind eye. It's because of education, they didn't know what to do. But we're rolling it out there now and talking about it. And that's a good thing, you know. Like, and we're getting on to Quivels, for instance, which is Queensland Indigenous Family Violence legal service, who give us the legal side of things. Like, one of the things is when a man becomes a perpetrator, the one thing he didn't know, especially in the communities that I work in, is that they lose all rights and responsibility to make decisions on their kids while that's pending.
So adding more fuel to the fire sort of thing?
More fuel to the fire, you know, and that's why I roll out that Aboriginal and Torres Strait mental health first aid for that reason, you know, so we can deal with this stuff.
And actual men's groups and gathering places, a centre, a place to gather, that is important, like you say. It's okay, we can sit around in a park under a tree and that's fine, but there are times when we need a place, a structure.
Oh, yeah, definitely need something that we can sit around, because, you know, one of the biggest fearful things, I suppose, is the shame factor. And shame could mean a lot of things, you know. could be shame that, oh, you know, we're meeting to talk about this or talk about that. But we want to get it out there that we are talking about this stuff. And the thing is, as men, as Indigenous men, we do care.
It's been said by different politicians and people over the years that there's a bit of an insinuation or an accusation that it's part of our culture. It's an introduced thing, is it not?
Oh, definitely.
This family violence is introduced with colonisation?
Well, if you have a look at family violence, it's a national thing.
It is.
It's not just Indigenous people.
That's right.
And we all need to deal with it, you know, like...
But it wasn't here before colonisation, I don't believe.
No, they had laws and that. Like,
yes, exactly.
A couple of the elders were telling me that that's where the spear in the leg,
yes.
I mean, you know, and the worse it got, the higher the spear got.
Yeah, right.
So just wasn't allowed. Just wasn't, like, violence is not our way.
What are some of the issues that men raise when you're sitting around yarning and stuff? What are some of the issues, like their frustration or their inner, their lack of awareness and knowing how to deal with things? What are they saying?
I suppose it's a respect thing. Like, respect could mean a lot of things, you know, like, and I used to work with some kids up in Cooktown, and I'd say to them, you know, like, what does respect mean? Respect means respect yourself, your family, your teachers or whoever, you know, in the community, because what you give is what you get. So if you give that respect, you'll get that amount of respect back.
And, of course, dealing with the young kids is essential, is it not?
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, these kids, they know everything that happens in the community. They know what you do. So then we all become role models, you know. That old saying, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, in our instance, it takes a community to raise a child. So we're all responsible for all the kids.
Yeah. What do you suggest or what has been one of the solutions or suggestions when we're confronted with a situation where there is violence taking place? It might be a man being heavy-handed with his partner in the street, wherever, and we happen to be driving by, walking by, in earshot. What do we do?
Well, if we're men in a men's group, we want to look at them as part of the support network so that they can go up and say, hey, come on, brother, let's go for a walk, let's go settle down somewhere, come back to the men's shed, as they say, and let's have a cup of tea or, you know, a cup of coffee and sit down and yarn about it. If you want to stay the night, and you can go home tomorrow when you cool off. You know, we just need that place to cool off. And cooling off could also mean, you know, you can take them fishing. Let's go down, sit by the river and drop a line, you know.
Wet a line. Yeah. Yes. Now, certainly a serious situation. What are some of the things that you do in your role at a Puna Pima?
One of the things I'm doing, or will be doing it, is the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mental Health First Aid. I work with men's group and supporting men and setting up programs for the men to be a part of, you know, like the other night in one community, the community was going through sorry business. So we just had a men's gathering. So they could just come up, and we had guitars there, dartboards and TV on, you know, put a movie on for them. It's just for a place for them to chill out, and if they want to talk, they'll talk. And if they don't, well, then sit down and watch a movie or play your guitar just to chill out.
You run workshops and things as well?
Yeah.
You're a master instructor.
Yeah.
With mental health first aid.
Yeah, I love the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mental Health First Aid. You actually have a few instructors down here in Brisbane, but we roll it out to the communities, and I've been to, I suppose, nearly all the communities rolling it out, and it's just to give them the education and awareness to deal with situations, you know, like, because they know the triggers. They know the triggers of someone in their family. They know when they're about to go off, so they can actually, if they have that education awareness, they can become part of the solution rather than the problem.
Mm.
You know, like before we used to say, oh, get down there and see the, you know, the psychiatrist because you doogie, you know, something wrong with you. Well, now we can actually help in that process, you know. Like, they're normal human beings that, you know, like, it's just a sickness. It can be treated, but you got to get them treatment.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. You were saying that it's not just in the First Nations communities, it's across the board, and there's a big network of men's sheds in the mainstream.
Yeah, well, as far as I know, and this is just my thought, I think, there's the Australian Men's Shed Association, which is the non-Indigenous one. Then there's Men's Shed Australia, which is the Indigenous one.
Oh, right. Yeah. Very similar in name.
Very similar, yeah. But and they're pretty good. They're looking at putting in, you know, if they got that funding, putting in dongas in each of the men's groups so that, you know, it is a place for somewhere to go so they can chill out for the night, you know. It's a respite centre, you might as well say.
Mm.
But it'd be in men's area and men deal with it.
Racism plays a big role in mental health. There's a link, there's a connection between suffering from racist activities, racist and discriminatory practices. There's a link to mental health.
Oh, definitely. Like, I do this one little exercise when I do the mental health first aid. I give people four pieces of paper, four little strips, and I say to them, okay, write down your family name, your favourite place, your the person you love the most, and your favourite possession. And then I get them to stand up and stand in a circle. Then I just walk around and snatch it out of their hands and drop it on the ground and just walk all over it. I had a woman once tell me she wanted to punch me in the face. But then I said to her, you just lost four pieces of paper. People in real life have lost all that. And so their mental health can also turn to anger, you know, and so we need to deal with that. So while not forgetting the past, because the past is, like, some of those people still living today and they still talk about it. You know, I've got mates that were part of that stolen generation and it hurts them to this day.
Was that transgenerational trauma? Transgenerational trauma.
Yeah.
Is a part of, like, it's also a big part of this situation we've got, we're dealing with.
Yeah, well, you know, like, in some time in our life, we all suffer with anxiety or depression, you know, like, people might ask us, oh, how do you feel today? Oh, I feel depressed. We use that term pretty loosely too.
Yes, yes.
But it's, you know, it's the solutions to it. You know, if it stops you from getting out of work or being part of your family or even just getting out of bed, then that becomes a problem. And that's why we, you know, we roll it out and deal with it. We're hoping that when I roll it out in communities that we could set up support networks.
Mm-hmm.
So that those people, you know, like, they got to talk to Bummer first before they talk to, you know, non-Indigenous
mainstream
people.
Yeah.
And we can look at referral pathways, you know.
Exactly.
For instance, yeah.
Yes, there is that need to be working, to be engaging with mainstream and blackfella organisations need to be engaging and working together on this issue.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's not just an issue for a few.
That's right.
It's a whole of community issue because, you know, if you're... And I always say this, if your spirit's weak, you get nothing. If it's strong, you get everything I got. Mm. And that's including effort, you know. Like, so, you know, that's what we try to do, make people's spirit strong.
Yeah.
So that, you know, when it's strong, then we can deal with the issues. Because mental health, you know, can lead to family violence or lead to alcohol abuse or substance abuse.
Suicide's
a big one.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take a break for a song. My guest is Michael Drahm. Michael is the Men's Health, Social and Emotional Wellbeing Officer at Punapima Health Service up in Cairns. And he's live in the studio. We're lucky to have him down in Brisbane visiting on a business trip and able to pull him into the studio here. Michael Drahm is my guest today, Men's Health, Social and Emotional Wellbeing in Punapima Health Service in Cairns. Michael, you run two-day workshops dealing with social and emotional well-being. With, is it just with men you deal with, or you have men,
whole
women?
Community.
Right.
Whole of community.
Yeah.
Like, what we've done is we identified three workshops per community. It's men's focus, women's focus, and services focus. But, you know, whoever wants to roll up and do it, like, you know, we've run one for councils, and they've done really well, you know.
They've done well in becoming part of the support network within community because, you know the issues, they identify the issues, and, you know, when you're looking at councils, for instance, their portfolios around roads and rates and electricity and water and whatever, the social and emotional stuff is up to community, and they have a lot of these community organisations to deal with it. But I suppose, you know, just being there is important. You know, when I rock up in the community, they know I'm there to do something, you know, and the men, they go out hunting or whatever. Like the last time I went to Kawanyama, it was great. We had wallaby stew and wild boar, you know, on the roast, and it was fantastic, you know, so it was great.
Yeah, yeah. The young fellas, the boys, like I said there earlier, one young fella I was talking to some time back, said, Unky said, what I really would like is to know how to be a man, to know what it takes to be a good man.
Yeah. I suppose in the old days we had the initiation rites, you know, and that's sort of taken away from us all, you know, like I know I was in one community and one of the old fellas, you know, well, a few of them said, we'd like to take the kids out bush and teach them black school, they call it. But then they said, but we can't because we might get into trouble for child abuse or something like that. But it is important when we have these men's group, we get them fellas to drag in, not drag them in, but bring in the kids and that, you know. So they become parents, they sit there and they look what men do. When we sit around and talk, they, you know, they're very observant. And as I said, you know, these kids, they know everything. You know, they know about all the drugs and all the alcohol and all that. So
substances and whatever.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we underestimate them. Doesn't matter how old they are, we underestimate them.
Yeah. They also know all about technology and stuff.
Oh, they're better than me at it.
Exactly. You know? Like, that's right.
If I have trouble with my phone, I just give it to one of the kids and they'll fix it.
They sort us out. Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. No, we do. We underrate them sometimes, our kids. That's for sure. With some of the issues that our people face, it's important that we make way for the women and that we involve the women, include the women in trying to resolve some of these issues.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's not just a man's issue, a man's problem, and we go off as men and deal with it.
Yeah, well, in Cooktown, for instance, when I was up there, I set up this a women's event. It was it's called Little Birung. You know Megan Smarten?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, she came up and she'd done she'd done a thing called Little Birung.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the story of six of her grandmothers. So we organised a women's event, you know, women's forum. But I got the men in to cook for them. So we spoiled the women, you know. We let the women go in and talk, do their talking. You know, had their forum where they talked about education in particular, how education for them was important and how education needs to be important for our kids. But, and we got them a cake and everything, you know, so they really enjoyed it. And I rolled out, like, the week was 2 days of mental health first aid. Then we had a pampering session for the women where they went and got makeup and massages and hair done and things like that. And they looked bloody good too.
Nice one. Yeah.
And, yeah, and then we had the women's night. And a week later, we had a gathering for the men. And, you know, that movie Mad Bastards with that fellow there? Well, that's what we talked about. And one of the things that we identified in it was the little fella, Bullet. When the show started off, he was burning down the house and whatever.
Yes,
but his life changed for the reason being that mum and dad changed. So, you know, and it was an awesome movie. And he came back to be home, you know. Like, and that men's group there was different to some of the men's group I deal with because, well, about 5 weeks or something, they didn't talk. Yeah. No one said a word.
Yeah.
But then they opened up. Yeah. And I suppose that's what men do. Like, you know, they're not ashamed of what they do or something like that. I think one of the things is even though we're frightened of failure, we're more frightened of success too, because, you know, like, our mob needs to support better. You know, the old bucket of crabs, for instance, the crab trying to get out, the others grab them and pull them back down. If we can support better and push more of our people up there rather than keep them in the bucket, then, you know, we may succeed out in life, you know.
There is a stigma.
Massive stigma.
Which is a part of the problem as well.
Mm.
Trying to break that down.
Stigma in everything. You talk about whatever the subject may be. Like mental health, I think, has one of the biggest or the largest stigma attached to it. You know, like families, for instance, don't know enough about it. And they say, you know, like, oh, he doogie, he right, leave him home.
No, he womba,
We're going fishing, but leave him at home. He right, he can take care of himself, you know, just till we get back.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
that's not the way to deal with it.
It's not. If they can make them people inclusive,
yes,
then, you know, it helps them out a lot too.
For sure, yeah. Mm. You know, there's got to be little tips like that that we can be utilising, because a lot of us are concerned that white fella medicine and padded cells and things like that, those institutions aren't working as well as we'd like them to work for us. And a lot of the times it just comes back to identity.
Yeah.
Mix up in the head with identity and things like that and pressure. So, but there are things that we can do in the community. We must be include our mob and try and assist, be there for them. Michael, we're about out of time. It's news time here. It's certainly good to have you in.
Oh, great to be here, mate.
We'll have to get you on the phone next when you go home in a month or two. We'll have a yarn about something else. If you run a workshop or that, we'll have to talk again about this issue.
I might be able to get the men's health team in there to yarn with you. How's that?
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Mm, for sure.
You have about half a dozen blokes on the phone and all voicing their opinion, because we're all, you know, we work in different communities.
Good.
So, you know.
All right. Well, hope you all have a great day. Thank you, Michael Drahm. I'm back tomorrow with Let's Talk.